Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here today. Today, we are going to be talking about a topic which so many people would just love to put it in the four walls of their home, keep it inside of their heart and their bodies, deny it, pretend it's not going on, give it some different names. Hey, juice it up and let's say it's rehab, let's say it's addiction, let's say it's violence, let's say whatever it is. What it really is trauma. What is the trauma in your life? What is the trauma to your body, your mind, and your spirit? We think about this and we say, well, no, I didn't have any really bad trauma. You see, hey, I'm all intact. You know, they didn't hurt me. But then people go out and they spew things and they're angry and they feel hurt and they have all this resentment and they treat other people with that vengeance with what they feel inside. What is trauma all about? What is violence all about? When I always talk on this show, we say about listening, compassionate listening, empathetic listening, listening with your two ears, looking with your two eyes, and totally not being with any judgment. I know so many people say, I'm hearing you, even this past weekend. Oh, yeah, I hear you. But can you tell me what I just said? And it's like, you know, it's not even worth it. You know, sometimes you just have to move on. So we will be talking today about trauma, listening, violence, and what can you really do? Can we affect change in this world? Because I'll tell you, as I've said to the guests a moment ago, sometimes I think the earth needs to go poof out of the universe because I'm not sure we have a reset button left. Today, my guest is Judy Atkinson. Her book is Trauma Trails, Recreating Songlines, The Transgenerational Effects of Trauma in Indigenous Australia. Judy, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a real pleasure to have you with us.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
So, Judy, I'll tell you, what are your thoughts on the things I've shared? Do you think, maybe this earth just needs to go poof?
I think we're at a crossroads. At that crossroads, we can take one path or we can take another path. I think at this moment that those people, we'll call them humans, that live here on this beautiful planet, have done so much damage, not just to the earth itself, but to us as human beings, to animals as well. And the crossroads are, is we can keep going down that path or we can make some choices to take another way. And I think that's important. And for me personally, I've decided to focus on the generations coming up. And as I link to children, then I link to their mums, their dads, often their grandparents who are looking after those kids because their parents are in crisis. So that's where I'm at. We're at a crossroads. I think you're right. And I think we need to make some choices ourselves.
You know, I think the time of silo living, as I usually call it, silo living, the I factor. I have a house. I need degrees. My kids are going to college. I have everything I need. And when we look back at it, you know, I've even said to somebody, I said, what's running your life? And their answer was their successes. And I said, I mean, is it that important to have that long of an obituary? You know, I mean, your legacy is your kindness and your love. Your legacy is not what's on your obituary. Yet so many people are so focused on that past that they just can't, they aren't willing to say there's something else out there. I always teach about the abundance of potential possibilities. There's always potential energy in the world. You know, everything out there, there's everything that is a possibility. Yet we have such limiting beliefs. We have such limiting lies. Everything we say is based upon our past experiences, our past history. If I stubbed my toe today on the table, I will say I'm not going to walk around the table because I stubbed my toe on it yesterday. You know, we always base things on the past versus being in the present, you know, and the future gets so construed that we live in fear. So I think sometimes all of that process is what gets us into this scope of violence, you know, is that the experiences of the past keep, you know, you run in fear with them, so you become violent because you're afraid of, you know, you're afraid of change, you're afraid of possibilities, you're afraid of what might come up, you know. And I think all of this is confusing to people at this time.
Yeah, I'd like to say that as an Aboriginal woman, that we would believe that the past, present and future is one. In fact, we're right in the moment now. What's been part of what we call the past has formed who we are now, and there is no future unless we make choices now for who we are and where we want to go. So there is the present, it's now, and we've got choices, and we can feel, understand, look back to things that have happened, not just on me as an individual, but us as a collective people, multiple people in all the different cultures around the world. So it's the choices we're going to make now that is going to make the difference in my life and in our lives.
Yeah, and we forget that a choice is just an experience. So all of those things of our past are just experiences. You know, a lot of people say, well, I made a wrong choice. I made a big mistake. And I guess in my conceptual thought is there are no mistakes and there are no bad choices. Did it? Okay. And sometimes we put so much emphasis on it being the word bad or being a mistake. So in other words, we get into this rabbit hole situation, you know?
I think what we have learning experiences, and we might label them good or bad, and I guess the learning experiences bring to us then a responsibility, maybe to act in a different way, maybe to act in a way that we reinforce the learning that we've got. I believe that we all have responsibility, but what comes before responsibility is the respect we need to have for each other, the respect we need to have for ourselves. As I call it, sacred beings, we are. And then we learn that we've got rights to be able to engage in a world of relationships, and with that comes our responsibility to act in a good way.
And that's definitely, I think, where the world is stuck is on the idea of responsibility and self-respect, because self-respect can really go down the toilet pretty quickly when parents put their influence on children, and they say, parents will say, you have no right to answer, you do as you're told until you're 18. Where did self-respect go, you know? Is it supposed to just come out of a box, you know, when you graduate high school? and so that hasn't really given them the ability to be able to start to see how they can start to cultivate that on their own. So that really is one area. You know, we look at our education systems across the world, you know, not just here in the U.S. It's all about this is the way the world is. Well, guess what? When you get it out, it isn't. And now with the internet, school books can't even keep up with the internet anymore. You know, all the information that's out there. So really what you're learning in school is antiquated by next week. So, you know, are we really changing the world and helping others learn self-respect and responsibility? Or are we having a push and pull with people in the cultures that are really saying, no, we want to preserve the way it always has been, because we fear change of it?
I think that you've named a couple of things there. First of all, the way parents think they own and therefore can dictate to their children. And yet a child is born into the world as an innate entity, a human being with a whole lot of DNA or cellular memory that will govern their life. And yet we want to form them as adults. We feel we have a right to form them in our image. That's
right.
Not true. Children have so much to teach us. And even in their bad behavior, they're teaching us. Their behavior is language. They're teaching us about the world in which they live. The second thing is that we as adults, as we've grown, hopefully, and we've started to take in some responsibility for who we are and what we are, then we've got to start making choices. I actually see a lot of adults who behave much worse than most children I know in the way that the me generation, you've touched on it before,
right.
I can't feel complete unless I've got this, this, and this, and this. And we don't take a deep breath and think about who we are as a collective.
Yeah. And I think we're seeing a lot of these changes where people are trying to change. I mean, even, look, I'm even raising my hand. I'm the first one to say, I make mistakes. Well, I make what I call dips in the ebb and flow. Because what I did was this weekend, I was annoyed. You know, I had a little thing where, hey, you know, you went out and you bought all these clothes for yourself and we went shopping, but I didn't get anything. So I kind of like had my own little personal tantrum, but, you know, and it was okay. And I spoke and we talked about it and it moved on. It wasn't something that was ingrained in me and that it was never going to, you know, it was going to ride the horse every single day. And I think so we have to give ourselves some flexibility as human beings to say all of these experiences are out there. It's just about what you choose for the moment. And, hey, if you have a little dip in the flow that day, okay, so what? You know, move on. Go to the next day, you know. And we might have, I think we say that we want to all be perfect beings, and we walk around professing we're perfect doctors, we're perfect teachers, we are perfect parents, and we hold up that thing so much that we end up storing secrets in ourselves. And storing things inside of us that end up showing up as disease. They end up showing as inner things in our spiritual life. They end up as things that erode at our emotional and mental health, you know, because we hold them in so much. We are so afraid to be what I call real that I don't think, I don't know if everybody's ready for that yet.
I think the world is, as a collective, and of course that means that there's all these billions of people who all have different ideas, is that the world is searching for something. They want to change, and yet we don't know how to change because we hold on to what you just referred to, the ideal. I want to be the ideal self.
Right.
The ideal self is in conflict with the created self that was created by our parenting, by the places we lived. And what is the real self? In me, you talked about going shopping, and I immediately thought of walking down the street just recently, and there was a sale on, and I went in to have a look because I'd just come out of a remote community, and some of the women were asking for if I could get them some, you know, secondhand clothes up there. So I walked into the shop and I saw all of these beautiful tops, and as I looked at them, and they were very, very cheap, I stood there and thought, I wonder who made them. In the places I would say they were either made in India or China, because they were incredibly cheap. I wonder what's happening in the lives of the women who were sitting sewing these tops. So anyway, I bought them and I will take them to the women who need them because they are really attractive. But I think I'm going to go back to again. I think it's we individually and we collectively need to start to think not just of me, what I want, but is what about us? And particularly, where are we going in the future for our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren? Where are we going as a group of animals, in fact, living on this planet? We are animals.
Yeah.
I've just come back from South Africa, and there was a discussion we had in the work we were doing about post-colonial, post-apartheid situations. So, you know, colonization has been a big thing around the world, and we've all been colonized at different levels. And the part of the conversation is becoming human again. And I think that's part of what we need to think about. being human in a world that's dehumanized us.
Mm-hmm.
Humanity.
Yeah, and I think
human.
Yeah, what is that? How can we potentially look at human? And what we think of as human is what I just said, is about having a little dip in our flow. In other words, having those experiences where you might make those little shaky things, so that's a human part, but also to have your spiritual part where you would have social responsibility or self-respect. And I think that, it's a very changing place to be. We look at the 80s and the 90s. My gosh, I remember growing up in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and it was, this is what the woman's going to do. That's what it's going to be. I mean, how the heck did I end up being a dental hygienist? Because I was told that was what I was going to go do. I didn't choose that in the 70s. We have to give ourselves a break, I think, as humans and beings like you and I are, because we have to give ourselves a break and say, this is where we are now in history, you know, and we're looking at it now at this time in history. Because if we'd had this conversation today, we could have never had it in the 70s. So in other words, we couldn't have changed life and then in those times. So what we've done is, as history has come along, we are now saying, with more capacity of the brain, with more information from the internet, with more spirituality and more seeing and more paying attention to the world around us. I mean, in the 70s, all you knew was your community. Hardly anybody ever rode on a plane, you know. Nobody ever went outside of their communities. And now everybody's everywhere. So it's history.
Can I just interrupt by saying that I think there is the intentional movement now for people to recreate community. And, you know, and I was in the United States last year in San Francisco, and really aware that the vibrancy was where people were working together to make or rebuild community. And I think that's something that's important. The other thing that is, I think that we can actually bring modern science into traditional understandings and practice. So there is such a thing, and I know lots of people would have heard about it, called epigenetics, or the cellular memory that we have of other times, other places. And we have a yearning to go back to that place called community. Community comes from the word communion. And we often are not heard because so many things are happening around us. You mentioned before that we tend to push the truth down, that we don't want it to come out. And you also talked about listening. And I think that pushing that truth down was about not being heard, the felt sense of not being heard. And there's a number of words in Australia, in Aboriginal Australia, about listening. And it's got, like, you know, we talk about inlet countries and all of the multiple words that mean snow. So what is listening? Listening from the heart, listening with the ear, listening with a deep understanding. And that goes back to, I think, in community once, we did respond to the pain, the stories of pain and distress. Today, we feel shamed. We're not going to go and tell somebody else that things aren't good in our life. I think that part of this is that in an evolutionary process, I mean by us moving to become even more human, we're starting to understand we lose our humanity when we don't listen to ourselves, the deeper part of us, and we don't listen to each other. And for me, the most magic thing that we can do is listen to each other and validate the pain, the distress, but also the courage, the strength that we have, all of us, in us to move on with our lives.
Yeah, I think of that deepness of the human, I call it the human gut. I mean that really raw deepness down in the middle of your core, what it is. We see this usually only when people get a diagnosis of something like cancer or when they have something really drastic happen to them. I mean, I've been in natural disasters. I've seen it, you know. I myself, hey, PTSD, hey, I'll raise my hand, you know. things, you know, here in New Orleans when everything was just washed away, it was pretty core and pretty raw. And people there, we didn't think about the differences of the people. We thought about what was similar in people. Yet, I think people then even still have squashed a lot of it back, which is now where we're having the violence 10, 15 years later. So, you know, there are those that will be able to go through things, but when you have these things like a natural disaster or cancer, what do we see? We see people saying, I'm going to take up the fight. I'm going to fight it. You know, I'm going to fight cancer. I'm going to fight that. And you think, what are you fighting against? You know, can you not allow that which your body is trying to say to you to flow out? And then you heal on the back end of it. Same thing with listening. You know, can we sit and allow those core things to come out in any way they can come out? I've had women over 50 group, and they would say, you know, but I'm really upset. And I said, you know, when your kids and your husband go to work, lay down on the living room floor and kick and scream and let all that go out. I mean, I myself, I'm the wailing queen, what I call. I mean, I wailed for years. I mean, literally years. There were days and days, I mean, at least 4 or 5 years, but that was all I did all day long. And then when they came home, get a shower and start over. Because I had so much pent-up stuff from myself, from the ancestral line. I was really energetically in, you know, our shaman ways or in our spiritual ways, whatever you want to call it. I had all of this stuff that just had to keep coming out. And I just kept going with it until finally there wasn't any more. And I don't know why we don't, as humans, give ourselves the responsibility to say that I can do that. Or why is it so looked down upon that these things are what we need to do or potentially need to do or are able to do. Because if we are putting restrictions on what comes out of our mouth or our body, then we are not really saying we right?
There's some things you mentioned there that I just want to respond to. There's an epidemic, as you know, around the world with this thing called cancer. And I believe it's because we're not living well. So living with cancer can also mean that we're living on a planet that is unwell. The illnesses that come out in our body, and the ACE study in the United States showed that beautifully, that children who are harmed are more likely to have, you know, cancer, diabetes, stroke, all of the things that are part of our societies that show that we're unwell. You also mentioned that, and I think around the world, people would, when we hear the words New Orleans, we think of the flood. And that was, on some people, a great violence. It destroyed homes. It destroyed, but it also was a great coming together when people started to respond to each other's needs. But 15 years later, you said there is an increase in violence there. Now, in emergency services work, we know that if we don't respond to the pain and distress that, and disorder that emergency services personnel are working with, that there is going to be a rupture in them later on. So let's put that into the whole community, New Orleans. How do we heal from that distress, that violence? It's a violence that came in a natural way from a flood, but there were other parts of it as well. So therefore, we need to think about how we work with that. And what I'd like to suggest that our bodies, our souls, who we are, we're just full of stories. And those stories can be shared in a way that will help us to connect with each other more as human beings. Now, I'm sure you've read the book by Leslie Silko, that I just love it, because it's a terrible book to read in a way where people are so full of stories. I'm just going to quote one part of it. I will tell you something about stories. They aren't just entertainment. Don't be fooled. They are all we have. All we have to fight off illness and death. You don't have anything if you don't have stories. Their evil is mighty, but it can't stand up to our stories, so they try to destroy the stories, let the stories be confused or forgotten. They would like that. They would be happy because we would be defenseless then. So in other words, in the stories that we hold, they're the stories that make us human. That's what connects us to each other. And I think it's an important thing for us to think about that and share. As you said, you know, I laid on the, you know, in my house, I screamed, I wailed. That's a natural process of allowing people to move through, for us to take responsibility for ourselves, to move through pain, distress. And we talked about children. We put so much pain and distress and disorder within the minds and the souls and the bodies of our children. And they have a right to wail and to... Oh, look, I just had a memory. When my three granddaughters were 3, 5, and 7 when their dad died, my son died. And so what I did is where we lived, I said, come on, we're going for a walk. And we went out, the tide was out, and we walked right out towards where the water was. And I said, come on, we're going to jump and scream, and you can say what you like, and you can roll in the sand and get as dirty as you like. And so we did that. Now, they probably didn't understand that I was allowing them to, and I wanted to encourage them
to vent.
To express the distress that their dad's death might have had on them. And I still have to think about that. We all got muddy and dirty with sand and you know, and salt water. And it was good for me, too, because in wanting to do this with my granddaughters, I was allowed also to let go of the deep, deep pain that was in me. We don't take enough of those opportunities as human beings to move through the pain that's gone into us, the violence that's gone into us.
What you have done then is you have, you have transformed the story of grief and loss into how you celebrated a human. That's what you did. So you changed the story and you gave it a different meaning. So then that's carried forth, you know. In other words, it has both sides. It has a yin and a yang. In other words, we say this is what happened, but this is how we transformed it. And I think that's the important part, is how do we get to that transformation part in the world, you know, to be able to do that. You know, I look at, we talk about cancer sometimes, and I was at the grocery store one day, and there was this woman, she had a port, you know, for the chemo and the radiation and all those drugs and all that stuff on her. And another woman walked by and said, oh, I didn't know you were having some treatment. She says, oh, I did that last time. That's not bad, is it? You'll be good. And I was thinking, how dishonoring could you possibly be to not allow her to have her own experience? And it was just like, I just wanted to go, you know, I wanted to change the energy somehow. I was tapping my head going, oh, you know, you just want to go stop. Allow them to have that, which what it would be for themselves. And I think so many times we cut them off. We don't want to hear it. We don't want to see it, you know. There was another flood here just recently in the past month, just north, just 50 miles north of New Orleans. Did anybody in the world hear about it? No. There are hundreds of thousands of people, and you know what? They're living in tents right now. They have nothing. No flood insurance, no money coming from the government. Red Cross is bringing them hamburger buns with a can of beans on top of it. You know, I mean, these people are living like that, but yet nobody reaches out. You know, I think so. Yeah. What we have to say as a human being is, keep your eyes open every day. Do the best you can every day and keep that focus going forward. I think that's probably the only thing we can do. You will start to what I call propel your energy. In other words, your energy might not just reach one person. You might start propelling it. You'll notice that 2 people will be listening, or maybe 4 people, or maybe 100 hundreds of thousands. In other words, take that energy and keep propelling it forward. That's what you and I are here to do. And that's what I think, that's how the change in the world will come out. I mean, we see this with a plant. You know, the stalk comes up, the leaves come out, and then it keeps going forward. Just keep going forward and we'll reach and keep going. And I think that's the concept of how do you transform, how do you transform a society or a culture?
I think it's I think it's a two-way process. First of all, I have to be responsible for me. You started to talk about how we listen. And listening is a relationship thing. If I listen deeply, the other feels seen, heard. But sometimes we don't want to listen because what the other is going through has triggered pain in us. So if we connect what I call our heart brain, our feeling, the mammalian part of our brain where we're feeling people with our neocortex, that's our thinking brain, and we can slow ourselves down. Now, in all of the times that I have learned the most, it's when I've been listening and listening and listening, and suddenly something resonates within me and there's an awakening in within me. And because that awakening has happened and I'm suddenly aware that there's things that I've been carrying in my life that I've never really dealt with properly, I'm responsible for creating within me, around me, a sense of safety and security. Then I go out and I reach out to community, to other people. And I find that they're as broken as I am, but together we start to rebuild ourselves. What I've found, this ever-deepening sense of self-knowledge. Now, you know, it may be that as a small child I was harmed and I've put it aside and got on with my life. And it may be that I have an experience where I feel crazy because I'm going through something that doesn't make sense. And if I went to a psychiatrist, they'd say, oh, you've just had a psychotic episode. You know, but it's not. It's some other breakthrough into my life that's alerting me to other times when I've been, when I have felt unsafe. Now, you've talked about being in your home and allowing yourselves to vent or to shake or whatever. In all societies, before this whole colonizing impact on us all happened, it was natural for people to dance and to shake their bodies, to vent, to and it's as a part of ceremony, and we deepen who we are. We strengthen our own cultural, which is multiple, and spiritual identities. And I think those things are important to us to individually take responsibility. But as I was listening to you, I also wanted to touch on what I found is important for emergency services or communities as a whole to think about. So if there's a disaster, and I think we're in a disaster in the world, then the first thing we need to do is think, how do we create places of safety and security for people so that they can be who they are? And then it's our responsibility, if we're aware, to start to talk in a calming way. Not that the world is, it is a disaster, but, you know, you and me together, and that's a collective we can make changes. So we start to help people rebond after crisis. And it's not the initial crisis that's the problem. It's the aftermath, the years after, that we have to keep focusing on that. So the next stage in that is, how do we build then an attachment and a bonding together? We've been through similar experiences, but very different experiences. In other words, and I'm going back to the flood that you talked about, we knew about around the world in New Orleans, but the other one that we hardly have heard anything about, we need to consciously build an attachment, a bonding, so that we know that we're not in this alone, that we're together doing some stuff. So there has to be a large-scale community outreach that continues. Now, I like that concept because it helps us to build humanity, to build our connection with each other. What I see is that we don't value ourselves. We don't value what we can do. And when I say we as a collective, it's you and me and we. So I look at you, you look at me and realize that separately we can do some things, but together we can do a lot more. And I think that's something in the world we need to be thinking about. And the final thing that I wanted to touch on is that everything that happens to us has meaning. And we need to look at that meaning and see the hope that it is possible to change our lives, to do something not just for the planet itself, for those creatures in the world that we call humans. Going back to that word human, I was once told that the word human meant the sound of God, human, the sound of God in who we are as living entities on this planet. Now, that brought to me a whole different understanding of the stories that I heard over and over again from people I'm in so much pain. And I know that in the time that I wrote Trauma Trails and I mapped generations of family stories that were incredibly distressing, and they would be similar stories that you would have on what you call, what we now call the United States of America, the American continent. But I wasn't overwhelmed with those stories. I was inspired that people could take those stories and do something with them to reform themselves as human beings. I think that we can restructure who we are, and that takes intent. I have to say one thing. I'm really, really interested in what's happening in the United States in the lead up to the elections. I'm not going to make a statement about them at all, who's what, whatever. But it gives us an opportunity to really think about our commitment to who we are on this planet at this moment. I think you started this discussion with, I think we're at a crossroads. I believe we're at a crossroads.
Right.
We can go down that pathway of total destruction, or we can start to make changes individually and collectively.
You know, and I think sometimes what happens is that when we say we make decisions, what are the decisions based upon? Are they based upon past? Are they based upon dogma? Are they based upon science? Are they based upon reproducing something that an action and a reaction? We have to think about that. And I think sometimes when you want to take an opportunity, sometimes I think I more like to take the option of potential instead of all the other stuff. And I think that government, healthcare, teaching professions, all of these things are still basing all of their information and all of their dogma on that. I mean, even when we look at religion, we think about, I think of the Catholics, you know, they say, oh, I did something wrong this week. I have to go to church to repent because now I have a sin. I'm going to go pray and then it's going to make it all better. And it's like, whose responsibility is it? Yeah. It's like, whose responsibility is it here? Yeah. And I think of the idea of sin as more or less like something with holding a bat over your head, where I'm going to hit you on the head if you do, quote, sin. So, you know, our concepts, our beliefs, our thoughts, our habits, our traditions are right now, I think, all thrown up into the air, and it's really saying create, create, create. And sometimes when we create, maybe we can just dissipate all that. I mean, I think of something as simple as I was working with a child with autism, and the mother had said, oh, it's his birthday coming up. We're going to have a cake. I'm going to make it. And I said, but he really shouldn't be eating sugar. Remember, we worked on that. She said, oh, but it's his birthday. It's special. We have to celebrate. And I said, you know what? Since where did that concept of having a sugared cake at birthday come
for
from?
Birthday.
And why is that such a requirement? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, because in our family, we don't have birthday cake. And I said, why is that such a requirement? They said, but it won't be a birthday without it. And I thought, why? You know, yes. are you so stuck in that silo that you can't see that? So you could have some kind of potential outside of that, and they just could not see that. So I think that's really what you and I are saying is be open to the potential and let some of that other go away.
And I think that it's one thing that we haven't really given a word to, and I think it's also is other things that we do based on past, and I'm using this word quite deliberately, trauma. I don't want to suggest that everybody's traumatized, but if I've not, as an adult woman, if I never had all the things that I wanted as a child, suddenly I want them for my children, even if it's not healthy. So the sugar cake is part of that. You know, I don't remember having sugar cakes for my birthday. Christmas, we didn't have lots and lots of money, but my mother always bought me a book for Christmas, always gave me something that was good in that way. And so the question I'm asking here is, so much of what we're doing today, is it based on past trauma? Are we following along a pathway where we've been
hurt?
We want to fill that hole up, that pain up, in what you've talked about, because this child, even though this child will not benefit from the sugar cake, I never had one, so I'm going to give my child this that thing that in myself I know is not good. Now, if we translate that to how we're behaving across the world at the moment, we see that so many of the things that we're doing are not good. The other thing is that the pressure on us to be the perfect parent often means that we're not being a good parent at all, because what's fed to us as how we should be means that, for example, again, I have to give this child a sugar cake. I know in my head that is not going to help him or her, but I still have to do it because the pressure from society as a whole is that this is what a birthday is about. So I think, you know, it's time we all took a deep breath. And we thought about, well, you know, what's my responsibility here? And collectively, what is our responsibility? But more importantly, let's take hold of the competency we have to change ourselves and change the world around us. You mentioned something in a very deep way of being competent. You said, I had this pain, I would go home and I would roll around the floor and I would do all the things I needed to do to get rid of that pain in my body, the energy, the trauma, I will call it. We don't have to go and pay a big lot of money to some person to listen to us, because we can listen to ourselves first. Maybe we might have a witness, somebody who comes and is with us. But, gee, you know, I think it's time we took back our sense of responsibility for our felt sense of competency to look after ourselves, to do things in a good way for ourselves. That reaches out to each other then.
You know, I think we are, yes, I think we are, there is so much addiction in the country right now, and there is so much drugging. I know of some friends who they said, my wife said that, you know, I was acting a little crazy because I got kind of excited. So, I was seeming kind of depressed. So they said that I needed to go have electroshock therapy, and I went and got my drugs for depression. And I was doing fine, and then one day I was driving down the street, and, you know, I started feeling really, really good, and they said, oh, no, it must be a bipolar thing because you're acting too good now. And I think, really, you and I have totally have the similar concept of that. When we look at it, we say, yourself to be you. And I think there's so much of that going on right now that people cannot see the forest through the trees. They still believe that which is dogma around them is that which they should be, because they're so afraid of standing up for themselves, for standing alone by themselves. And I can honestly tell you, actually probably this past year I said, gosh, I feel so alone in this process. You know, I feel so alone speaking up. I feel so alone that they don't all understand, or I feel alone that I don't have community, or you feel alone that, what you're saying does not meet with another person, what they're saying, so you don't have that banter back and forth. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's quite true when you have lived with a certain community or lived with a certain family or are in a certain workplace and everything has always been the same it was and you started to say, I want things differently, you will have to stand alone because until you get out of it, because you're standing above it, you're standing different from it, and you can't expect to banter from a higher point to a lower point all the time because what ends up happening is you get drained. And that's where I've been, you know. You get drained. You keep trying to say, don't you understand? Don't you see it? You know, don't you get it? And they're like, they're almost like, you know, a newborn looking at you with googly eyes and there's no conversation, you know.
You just mentioned newborn. Sometimes when you look into their eyes, you feel that they've got more happening in there than we have happening within us. They have a knowing that maybe we've lost in some way. I'm going to go back to your theme that you started with, listening. That capacity to really listen. And I think sometimes that we have to take in a responsibility to listen more deeply. There's in the Gumbungee people in Australia, they have a word that I can't pronounce for listening. And they talk about hearing, learning, understanding, and then knowing from the heart. I don't think we're listening to ourselves. I don't think that we're hearing ourselves. I don't think we're looking deeply at ourselves. I think we don't want to listen sometimes to what's happening within us and the things around us. So some of the things that you're talking about are important. I believe that we need to slow down. I believe that we need to use all of the different techniques that we have to learn to listen, not just to our body, because our body tells us if we're well or not well, but those around us, because we can't be we unless we're connecting with other human beings. That's what being human is about. So how do we build that community that can listen? I've seen it being able to be happen, slowing things down and truly listening to the other. Why is it that we don't want to let others see our pain, our distress? Why do we always have to put on the, you know, the persona is on this person, this great big person all dressed up beautifully?
I think our hearts are so walled up that you know, sometimes people will sit there and watch a sappy story on TV and they'll come away crying, and then and what they're really touching and connecting with it on there is the potential that of life, you know. People say, oh, no, you're just saying that you don't have that. No, you wish you have that. No, they're just connecting with the potential for life, period. Leave it at that, you know. And sometimes our hearts get so walled up that we can't let it release because of fear of what's going to release. You know, Judy, we just have a little bit more time left. And I think this will bring right into this topic of fire and water. Can you share, you wrote about fire and water in your book, and I think that's right where we're at in this discussion.
Yeah. When I was doing my PhD, and the PhD came because a child had been raped, and I was asking questions as why there was not a proper response to that child's hurt and the grandmothers that were very distressed. So I decided to do a PhD that looked at violence. The listening to the stories of violence then moved me into reading trauma theory, and I started to map trauma theory and map trauma in people's lives. And then they said to me they wanted to do healing work. And I said, well, what is healing? You tell me what healing is. And they said, no, we can't tell you. We'll show it. Let's do it. Let's just see what it looks like. And at that time, I was living in a place called Yeppoon, and the Keppel Islands were off the coast there. So we were going to make ourselves an organization, and we sat and talked about it. And we found two words. We meant fire in Wapabara language, Ili, Oli, A-L-L-I, all E, means water in Mapabara language. And I realized that, in fact, every time I sat with a person, I was listening to fire and water, anger and grief. Under anger was this deep, deep grief.
Mm-hmm.
And I also then, as we named the organization that we were trying to be forming, WEALI, Fire and Water, Anger and Grief, that whenever somebody dropped into deep anger, they started to name, and anger is just an emotion. It is not a bad thing. Being angry is not bad. A lot of people say it's bad.
Mm-hmm.
It's when it moves into the action of violence. I have a right to be angry, not just for me personally, but if there's been generational pain, distress, disorder, violations, then I have a right to feel angry about that. But the anger can make me unwell. When I moved into the grief, and people dropped into the grief, that's when the beauty started to emerge. People started to paint. I mean, the grieving happened. And there's one particular story I'll just share with you. We were doing the loss and grief workshop, and it was a mixture of Aboriginal people and non-Aboriginal people in this group. And there was one particular man, a white Australian man, who was very rigid. And one of the things that I asked them to do was to write a letter to the person, or do something to the person that they held the most anger towards. And he told me it was crap, it was stupid, you know. I'm not going to write to my mother. I'm not going to write to my mother. I mean, you know, she's been dead for years. So I said, okay, but, you know, everybody else is going off to do something. Some people painted. Some people made songs and put music to it. And off he went. And finally, we waited and waited and waited for him to come back. And he finally came back into the group. And he was just in a hot, he had transformed. And he said this: when you asked me to do that, I thought, what a load of bullshit. Excuse that expression.
Yeah.
That's what he said.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you know, how can I write a letter to my mother? She died, you know, 10 years ago. All the things she did. And he said, I sat down and I did what you asked. I thought about it, and I wrote three things that she did for me that I really respect her for, the things that I love her for. And then I thought about three things that, you know, that where she harmed me, where she did things that were negative. And he said, and now I've written what I want to say to her now. And then he looked at everybody and said, can I read my letter to my mother to you all? And it was beautiful. Mm-hmm. And this was, you know, this was a grouchy, past middle-aged white man who had never expressed an emotion in his life, except to be angry. Yeah, so grief takes us into places of transformation. It brings back the depth of who we are as human beings. And so WEALI, fire and water, anger and grief, and all the different attendant emotions and activities that come out of this anger and this grief. Look at the world today. Look at what we're doing to each other. A person or a country harms another country, and then we have a big fight about that.
Right.
You know, we act from the anger into the violence. And the grief, when we see how we're hurting other people, children, you know, on our televisions, the photos in our papers of children being, you know, profoundly harmed, the grief that we feel when we know that we humans are doing this. That's where I, and that's what we, I mean, the work I do is I'm about to go into a prison for 4 weeks to work with women, and it's just something I love doing. I work a lot with children, their mothers. I'm retired, by the way, and I'm enjoying being retired. I'm actually coming to the United States at the end of October just for a four-day meeting. I think it's in New Mexico with Humanity United. Humanity United? Think about that. Think about what we could do together if we could unite instead of destroying the planet, destroying each other. Yeah. We are in water.
I'll tell you, I even, just in closing, I just reflected back when you were speaking about that, about I had gone to a rehab place. A family member had been there, and it was family week, so I had gone for family week. And I had come out of a session, And I had said something, and one of the teachers had said, why didn't you say that in there? Why didn't you knock that person down? Why didn't you push him away? Why didn't you this, that, or the other? And I looked at him with quizzical eyes, and I just, it didn't even resonate with me. And my answer just now, as you were speaking, was, because I don't begin violence with violence. You know, and because that's why I don't. That was something that was, that it was, I had experienced violence in my entire life, and I don't beget violence or violence. I don't believe in an eye for an eye. I don't believe any of that. I guess as we can always say, I'm bigger than that for myself, because I've taken that responsibility for myself. So I've kind of stepped up out of it. So I don't look to have violence with violence. So I think that's really the answer, is that we see a lot of people going into rehab now. We see them going into all of these big, you know, we see it on reality TV. You know, you have to hit this. You have to push the person. You have to whatever. And it's no, don't spew on other people that which you need to release. It's sort of like, I've seen so many people over the years, very powerful people, and I know they have a lot of grief in their background because I know them personally. And you would see a picture, and you would see when they were yelling and they had their fist raised, the spew coming out of their mouth, you know, when you had a picture. And I would say, do not spew on anyone, you know. And I think that's really what changing the world, transformation, and getting and making a change in the world is about. It's about not spewing. Violence does not beget violence. You do not. It's not an eye for an eye, and step up and above it. And I think that's really what we've talked about this entire hour, is how can you do that?
I think that's a beautiful way to close. And I think as you move into the next few months, I think there'll be a lot of people around the world watching and the results of the elections in the United States, and understanding that this nation of so many millions and millions of people who come from so many different countries around the world has the capacity to show the world a different way. And I think that's important. Yeah. And you've done it over here. It's now daylight and all the birds are in the trees, and I'm looking at one of the trees on my veranda. There's a koala sitting in a tree here, and the birds are all awake, and the sun's just come up. It's a new day, and I think that we can take that and start to think with it. Yeah, what can we, each of us individually and we collectively, do to make that new day a possibility for all of us?
Absolutely. Well, Judy, it was a pleasure to have you. Can you share with the listeners how to find out more information about you? That would be great.
If they want to find out more about me, well, of course, the book Trauma Trails is out there. It's been picked up now and is used as a teaching tool in universities. It gives a way forward, I think. More particularly, I'm just trying to think of if in the United States people were trying to contact me, it would be the area code 61-409-866-075. That's my mobile number, and I'm generally not at home, so it's better to use that. My email address is judyatkinson1@me.com. So it's the old MAC address. It's not MAC any longer, it's ME. And all of it is lowercase, judyatkinson1@me.com. I can then send you the websites. I can't think of them at the moment. I am standing, you know, just looking out over some trees while I talk to you. But there is a website.
We'll also put that website on the bottom of today's show page. So if you'd like to find out more information about Judy, you can click right on the bottom of the show page, and that she can go. We can go right directly to that. So we'll have that on there.
Thank you. It's been lovely talking to you this morning.
It was an absolute pleasure. You know, I hope maybe you will be able to come back maybe in a few months. I really think that violence trauma is something that, while you and I are in the lurches of it and maybe rising a little higher, I think there's zillions and zillions of other people, as I say, that have not gotten to that awakening point in their life yet. So this will be a topic that is very constant until the world transforms or the earth goes poof, as I said in the beginning. So I think, you know, I think it's a conversation where, you know, we really do need to recognize it and share as much as we possibly can, because when people have all these inner thoughts and these inner feelings, they need to realize that they're not alone. As I've said, I've gone through it, and I swore I was alone. I still swear I'm alone sometimes. But, you know, I bring people on like you, and I'll say, you know what, I'm not alone today. We had a good conversation. So thank you so much for that discussion. I think it was great.
Thank you. And, listen, I just got the website there. It's www.weally.com.au. So it's www.weally.com.au. Thank you for having me. It's been beautiful.
Judy, it was a real pleasure to have you. It was a great conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you. All the best. Have a good day.
Thank you. If you'd like to find out more information about Judy Atkinson, please do click on the bottom of today's show page for her link to go directly to her website. And please do check out the book, Trauma Trails. It is out and it is published. You can find it all over the internet. Just Google Trauma Trails. It will show up. And thank you so much, everyone, for joining us today. And please, yes, we know it is a hard journey. We know that there are a lot of stumbling blocks. And we know you feel alone. Join us each time on the radio. Just listen to a few more tips. Say, you know, I feel like that. Oh, goodness. I don't feel so alone today. I don't feel so broken. I don't feel so hurt. And I don't feel so just great. I need to just listen and just be able to pick up something. So thank you so much for joining us today. And until tomorrow, this is Dr. Jeanette, and have a great day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.